Welcome to the Tradies in Business podcast with your hosts, Warwick Bidwell and Nicole Cox. Divert your phone and grab a brew as Waz and Nick unpack tips, tales, secrets and stuff-ups from guests both inside and outside your trade, helping educate and inspire you to break the cycle of gut-busting and money stress and create a true trade business.
G'day, listeners.
Hello, listeners.
Hello, Coxie.
Hello, Waz.
Is that your,
I'm trying.
Podcasty voice.
I'm trying. I'm very trying, some would say.
now we're both really reluctant to do our podcast voices.
I swear to goodness, I don't have one. Do I have one?
Pot calling the kettle black. Anyway, hey, listeners. Welcome to the Tradies in Business podcast. We have a cracking interview today for another of our real tradie guys stories.
Mm-hmm.
That's a bit too long. It's not very catchy.
Real tradie guys.
The real tradie guys thing is good. RTG. That doesn't have a ring to it either. Anyway, we've got a real tradie guys episode coming at you today. This one's cool. I've had this dude on my list of people that I wanted to get on the show for quite some time. I actually met Justin in Sydney a couple of years ago when we were both down there pretty much sponsored by Mates in Construction to go and do some training, some suicide prevention training, and basically just learning how to speak about our respective stories. So for those that don't know, I've had a personal experience with suicide, as has Justin. And so today's episode, while it's not all about that, we've had a few lately, which I guess is testament to the fact, Coxie, that a lot of people are struggling with or working through mental health issues or even, you know, suicide issues. So just a warning perhaps about today's episode that we do talk about it, as we already have. And if you're in need of help or support, or if you're not feeling okay, then please reach out to either Mates in Construction or Lifeline. I think the Lifeline number is 13114, and Mates is a really long one that I can't remember. but seriously, just go to Google Mates in Construction or Lifeline, and please get in touch with those organisations or Coxie and me.
Yeah,
drop us a message. You're a listener, so you're part of our tribe, part of our crew, and we've already had a couple of people reach out to us in the last few months. So by all means do that, and we can certainly support you and connect you with the right people. But today's interview is with Justin Gange. Now, you probably don't know who Justin Gange is, but you would know.
I think you probably do. You just don't know.
If you've watched a game of football, rugby league, that is, in Australia, in the last...
So it's not actually football, it's rugby league.
10 years.
Not soccer.
Well, see, it's soccer. Well, it's soccer,
soccer
or football.
Soccer is football.
Yeah, but not for me. I'm an Australian. So, yeah, if you've watched a game of league...
Thank you.
In the last 10 or 15 years, there's a fairly high chance you've seen today's guest doing backflips in a foam horse's head mascot outfit called Buck the Bronco.
Buck the Bronco. My kids are going to be so impressed that I just interviewed Buck the Bronco. I'm going to go up 10 levels here in mum shit.
Oh, you've got some serious cred coming your way. So Justin was Buck the Bronco for a whole bunch of years.
20 years?
Yeah.
20 years.
20 years. But more than that, he is the husband of a very patient wife, the father of two IVF daughters. He was a plumber for 25 years.
Still a plumber, still a licensed
plumber.
Well,
yeah, he's still licensed, although he doesn't go around inspecting compression joints or anything like that. he's an old soldie. Soldie, is that what he said?
Yes.
He spent 20 years with Queensland Rail, and he has a mental illness and a lived experience of suicide. So he's been working with Mates for about the last 5 years, and he's had a heck of a lot to do. So he's a field officer with Mates in Construction. He's had a heck of a lot to do with Are You OK, Movember, Suicide Prevention Australia, and a whole bunch of awesome organisations that are very much in support of change in this area. So I've seen Justin share his story on stage in front of hundreds of, industry people and people like myself at training in Sydney. And it's a moving experience to hear someone like Justin share his story, but more so just the sharing that that encourages from other people. So, I was really stoked with today's interview, and I hope as a listener you get something out of it as well.
Absolutely, enjoy.
So we're going to jump right in with a man who jumps very high. I think you jump pretty high, don't you, Justin?
Oh, look, at least 2 inches, mate.
Mate, welcome to the show. Good to have you here.
Thanks, mate. Yep.
Now,
well to be had.
Well, we'll see how well we had you in a minute. So, mate, this is a real tradie guys episode, as we said. We've read your bio, which, given that you wrote it, is probably slightly embellished, mate, but...
I like to give myself a few tickets, mate.
You should.
now you are you still a real tradie?
Look, mate, I'm a plumber by trade, and I've still got the license, but I work for a mob called Mates in Construction, so we actually go out having yarns with people in construction and trade industries and talk about suicide prevention and mental health. So yeah, that's what I do.
Do you ever feel compelled to give people feedback on their joins?
Look, I'm a copper brazing man from way back, and so all these young tackers using blimmin' clip-on bolts, you know, they just don't have my vote, I'm afraid.
Don't really know what they're doing there, do they?
Yeah, no.
It's a different skill set, that's for sure.
Oh, it's Lego with some benders, you know.
G'day to all the young blokes listening to the episode.
Yeah, sorry, guys. We're going to bag. This is the one we bag, yeah.
We love yous all.
That's it.
We love yous all. Now, mates, so you work for Mates in construction, yep. and for anyone who does know about Mates, you know, they'd be familiar with the work that they do, and we'll talk a bit about Mates today on the episode. I was probably more interested to know what it was like, because are you still pulling on the horse's head, mate, or did you give that away?
I've had to pull the pin, mate. There's a bubble in the middle that prevents me from doing the zipper up. So
for our listeners, so benefit, what we're talking about here is Justin was, for how many years were you the Broncos foam horse mascot, mate?
Yeah, close to 20 years as Buck the Broncos. So,
holy moly.
But as you can tell by the grey hairs, you know, I'm letting the young fellas get in and do all the backflips and stuff like that.
So I was curious, mate, like how the heck do you get a gig as the Broncos mascot?
Yeah, look, nepotism. I get a heap of mates, and they're all concreters and plumbers and everything like that. And back in the back when the Broncos started, one of their wives worked for a bank who had some mascots there at the game, and they asked if she knew anyone that crazy enough to chuck on a suit. Her husband and my mate jumped in, and pretty much from that day on, you know, 1988, they've sort of been getting one or two of us in to do the mascots, and then I kind of took over from 2000. So, it's been an awesome journey. We had a few premierships. Let's not talk about this season, though.
Well, I wondered if there was some special training, mate. I mean, you're a highly trained plumber. What sort of training did you go through to be Buck the Bronco?
Yeah, just a couple of words, you know, don't throw up in a suit. There you go, out you go, lad.
It actually looks really physically draining. As much fun as it looks it looks really physically draining.
I've had a couple of gigs over in New Zealand and Townsville and down in Sydney, and each time the suit got weighed there and coming back, and it was actually 2 to 2.5 kilos heavier. So that's the amount of sweat that you do game time, and so she's pretty full on.
I wouldn't want to be the contractor dry cleaners for that suit,
mate. No, we cleaned our own suit, mate. There you go.
Yeah, shake a talcum powder and a spray of Rexona, you'd be all good.
Oh, giddy up, yeah.
So, mate, you've done a heck of a lot more than prance around in a horse's head. Mate, give our listeners, I guess, a bit of a a journey, if you like, or perhaps a timeline, mate. You know, you do some pretty amazing work, Justin, and you and I have been connected through the Lived Experience Network and Mates in Construction previously. So tell us a bit about, and I know you've told this story a million times, mate, but sadly, I don't think enough people have heard it, your story and the story of those like you. So just sort of fill our listeners in, mate.
Yeah, look, I mean, trade-wise, I come over to Australia as an 18-year-old Kiwi. You know, excuse me for that, for all the non-Kiwis there out there. But I came over to be a singer, and I wasn't real flash as a singer, so I had to get a trade. I had to get a real job, and so, you know, I tried concreting, bricking, and building and carpentry. I finally ended up getting a plumber's apprenticeship with Q-Rail back in 94. So 20 years on the tools, and I started my own little business, Jelly Belly Plumbing. Maybe sewage to you, but it's bread and butter to me, was my catch cry. mate, look, not a great businessman, mate. I just cannot do, you know, I was forever under quoting and not charging people, mate, because that's just not my heart. But so I ended up back in the rail and climbing the ladder there, and then it's doing all sorts of stuff. As you know, I did my mascotting since 94, did all that sort of stuff. 2012 rolls along, and I'm working, pulling big shifts, doing bits of plumbing, doing I went for state politics and went on Australia's Got Talent, and just manic. So it was full on, and then come the end of the year, I actually, I crashed. Mm. You know, I was living in a real state of mania, and then finally I crashed, got admitted to my local hospital psych unit, where they diagnosed me with a mental illness, bipolar type 2. And then the following year, there were large layoffs in our sector, and mine was going to be one of those jobs. And so the blinkers were on. I was unwell, and facing the prospect of not being able to support my beautiful family. And so I set about on a course of action to try and take my life. And fortunately, that I was found in time. And as a result, I began to justify to all my mates who were visiting me in hospital, and all these salty tradies just coming in saying, "Mate, we care about you," in their way. And they asked me why I did what I did, and you know, as I began to justify and be pretty transparent with them, I realised the more I talked about it, it gave them permission to tell their stories as well. And what I was finding out, mate, is we're all going through stuff, you know, lots of different stuff, but we're all going through stuff, but we weren't talking about it. We'd be talking about the footy or about this, that and the other, all the bibs and bobs, but we weren't talking about stuff that matters. And so I guess from that moment on, from that second chance that I get that a lot of people don't get, I made it my mission to have a conversation, to be transparent, to be fair dinkum, and hopefully give my mates and the people out there who hear that story permission to share their stories, because I believe the connection of a story says that, you know, we're all human, we're all flesh and blood, and by sharing these stories, we might be able to just, you know, pop our hands up when we're doing it tough, or, you know, be confident enough to reach out. So yeah, that's it in a nutshell, as Austin Powers would say.
Slightly different accent though, mate.
Yeah, that's right.
So what's a typical week look like for you these days, Justin?
Yeah, look, pretty full on. Well, let's take this week. I've been training Monday, so we'll go onto a construction site. We'll do there's a three-tiered approach of training. It's all suicide prevention, so giving people tools on how to identify when their mates might be doing it tough, how to notice some of those invitations that they might be throwing out there, and how to ask the question, taking 10 seconds of courage to you say, "Mate, I've noticed you're not like yourself, you're not doing stuff, you're not saying stuff like yourself," and then talk about suicide, and then getting them on to help. So that's the training that we do in three different layers. You know, there's a general awareness, there's connector sessions who are volunteers, and then assist training. So we do that. That'll be Monday. Tuesday, I did a bit more training, that I had a yarn with some people. So I do podcasts like this, just sharing my story. Tuesday night was speaking in a men's shed out at Chermside there. Wednesday on a 5 a.m. flight to Rockhampton, where we went to the Stanwell power plant and had a bit of a yarn with the people there at the power plant, giving them they've got a big shutdown going on, so utilising that time to give them tools to, you know, help each other out when we go through stressful times as well, you know, a lot of sparkies and stuff like that. We're all human, mate. We all go through stuff. Mm. And yesterday, more training and just time to visit a few sites, say g'day, you know, because every now and then you might just visit a site and there might be the perfect time for someone to say, hey, I'm struggling at the moment, or I've got a mate who's struggling. Can you give me a bit of advice, or, you know, give me a hand or point me in the right direction? Mm. Yeah, and today I'm on holidays, having a yarn with you, and then I'm going up to spend some quality time on the Sunshine Coast with me favourite family. So, yeah.
As opposed to the non-favourite one. Yeah.
How many families have you got, Justin?
Wasn't going to let that one go, mate.
No, you can't. You touched on something there, Justin, 10 seconds of courage. That's fantastic saying, and that's all that it can take. It can be just, you know, we do, on many occasions, we do notice that somebody's a bit different, or their personality's changed, or they're a bit flat, or they're just a bit different to how they normally are when they're when we're hanging around or knocking about on site or having a beer after work. And you're right, it takes 10 seconds of courage to be able to say, hey, mate, I've noticed that you seem a bit flat. Are you okay? Can you expand on the courage that it takes and how you've seen that pay off with some of those harder conversations being had?
Yeah, look, it's what we talk about is calling people out on what you notice. You know, it's you're not making stuff up. It's saying, you know, I notice you, you know, doing stuff that you don't normally do, whether that's you know, turning up late or not turning up at all. That's not like you. Or even it could be your language. You know, when you're a positive person, all of a sudden it's negative, or you've been cranky all your life, and then all of a sudden it's like you've won the lotto. It's calling people out on those things that you notice that are out of character for them. Mm. And that 10 seconds of courage, I've seen that so many times where you call people out and you say, what's going on, that people will open up because you've cared enough, you've got the courage enough to ask the question. And we always say, don't ask the question if you're not prepared to hang about for an answer, hang about for a conversation. Mm. Because like in my case, you know, I began to justify why I was behaving like I was behaving. And so I find that 10 seconds of courage is enough to crack it open for someone to be, do you know what? No, I'm not traveling okay. And usually it's this, that, and the other. What I say is listen without judgment, listen to understand and not to respond because, you know, I'm a plumber, I love fixing stuff, that's what I do. But when you're asking someone that 10 seconds of courage question, what's going on, you'd be, dishonouring that person to think that you can fix it in 5 seconds. Mm-hmm. So what I say is, you know, listen to understand. As soon as you go into fix it mode, you stop listening. Mm. And so listen to understand and hear them out. Because a lot of the time people just want to be heard. When I was doing it tough, when I was struggling, I had all these thoughts ruminating around in my head. And sometimes just, you know, you've got to go to the side of the brain that actually puts it into logic when you start speaking it out. Mm. And so for some people that can take that's a big process. Mm. And so listening to someone and then, you know, when you get to the end of that, I'm not a counsellor, I'm just a plumber. So I always say, mate, I'm just a plumber. I reckon you've got a bit going on there. I reckon we need to get you to some help. Mm. And that's what it's about, in my opinion. It's not about throwing a pen saying, oh, here's a 1-300 number, here's 1-800 number. How about we make this call together? How about we, you know, we continue this journey together and we call someone who can help you right now? Mm. And I've seen it happen time and time and time again. And, you know, there are people still here on this planet because a mate's taken 10 seconds of courage to have a conversation that's changed their life. Mm.
I think it's really important if we can just dispel something too while we're talking about this. A lot of us a bit frightened of maybe what we're going to get ourselves into by asking a question like this. You've just languaged or spoken about the fact that, you know, to assist somebody, it really helps to make that phone call or do something together to get them in a better space. For a lot of particularly tradies, a lot of blokes even, I might hesitate to say, it feels uncomfortable to put ourselves in that position where we might become a part of somebody's journey. Can we talk about what that might actually look like for someone? Because I don't think it's really as scary as we think it might be.
No, look, and this is a question we get all the time, you know, I just don't want to do any damage, I'm worried. And I had a point in my time, and I use this example, where I was really struggling. This was just before my admission into hospital in 2012. And I was so many things that I was doing were, you know, just little red flags all over the place. And my boss picked up on it. And he kept taking me out for coffees, going, mate, are you okay? Are you okay? What's going on? And you know, typical bloke, yeah, no, I'm all right, mate. You know, the Alfie. But every time he asked me, although I didn't give him the answer that he was waiting for, there's a little part of me deep down that thought, far out, someone cares enough to have this conversation. Mm. And so it was almost like a little seed of hope, a little seed of light in a dark, dark place that I was at. And then finally, you know, I said, I'm not Flash. And we went to his office and he said, come on, let's make a call to the GP. So can I encourage anyone that's worried about someone, just having that conversation, wherever it goes, is actually given, letting someone know that someone cares enough to take that 10 seconds of courage. Mm. And that could just be the little glint of hope that someone that needs right at that moment. So as tough as that is, we ask these questions because we care.
Yes.
And that's the number one thing. A lot of times when people are struggling, doing it tough, they think no one cares. Mm. So if we can shatter that little bit of pane of glass right there and say, just by asking that question, whatever the answer might be, just lets them know that someone cares enough to say, I've noticed and I'm going to ask that question because I care about you.
Mm.
So, Justin, I want to ask you a bit about, you sort of brushed over it a little bit earlier just in telling your story about your business and how well you sucked at that, which, you know, I mean, our listeners tune into this podcast because they're interested in improving their business and all that sort of stuff. But, I mean, I've got a few questions about it, but one is, what part did that play in, you know, pushing you further down the river? You know, we talk about the river of suicide. What part did it play? And I guess, you know, what could you have done differently, or how could that have actually perhaps kept you out of the river in the first place?
Yeah, look, I'm a decent plumber. I was an honest student, everything like that. So I was confident in my ability. Where I struggled with my plumbing business was that I wasn't good. You know, I got me, you know, my contractor's license, everything like that. So I've done all the bookwork, but my heart is not a person. I do stuff for free if I could everywhere, and that's where I struggled. I'll do a good hard day's work for a good day's pay, but as far as running a business and charging people, that's where I struggled. That wasn't my cup of tea. And the impact that that had on me was that I'm a failure. Mm. In all reality, no. I was a pretty good plumber and, you know, I could get the jobs, but there was one part of me that's, you know, we all have our strengths and our weaknesses, and that wasn't one of my strengths, being able to do that. But that didn't stop that playing on my mind, which said, you're a failed businessman, you're no good at this. And so that had a tremendous impact on myself and my family. My oldest daughter was born at that time. So we had the challenges of, you know, a newborn and all the, you know, all the bills that go along with IVF and all that sort of stuff. And then running a business, it was a challenge, and it really, the impact it had on me, it was a big chink in the armor, that's for sure.
Because it's one of the things that, I guess, in terms of the ongoing change that we're all trying to make around mental health and suicide, there are organisations like Mates that are doing spectacular work in terms of that intervention and, you know, first responder, I guess, almost catching people as they're falling into the river. But I'm always curious to talk to people like yourself about what happened 5 years prior or in the, you know, during the 10 years leading up to that point, that if we can sort of get to those points, can we actually equip people like you to not fall in the river in the first place, you know?
100%.
What are your thoughts on that, mate?
Brilliant. And I mean, you know, I'd sooner get to where I was with my business. I buried my head in the sand, mate. You know, it got all too difficult. So I wouldn't even know where to go. As a sole business owner, you got no one to check up on you, no one to look over your shoulder, mate. You just got your ute and your tools. And then oftentimes, you know, you do lunch in a park or you do lunch in your, you know, on the side of the road. And so who's to check on you, in on you? And, you know, my wife was busy with family and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, that's the ultimate question. How do we reach people when they're in those moments? And I suppose it's by doing what you're doing. It's by having these conversations, by learning from the experience of those that have been there, that have walked some, you know, dodgy old pathways, that hopefully to say, do you know what? We're not help seekers by nature. I've got to be honest. My father wasn't a help seeker. His father before him, and we teach our children these things. So it's really tough to say to someone, oh, you've just got to reach out and find help. But what the difference, what we're trying to do is we need to be health offerers. Because sure as eggs, if I've got a mate who's moving house, or, you know, I'll lend him a ute. If I've got, you know, someone who's needs their lawn mowed, I'll mow their lawns. But that's what we've got to create, this open dialogue that you're creating, that we're all creating, hopefully, to be able to say, do you know what, I'm noticing I haven't seen the mate playing golf in a while, and, you know, he's a tradie and, you know, we don't catch up. So maybe we reach out more rather than asking people to reach out, if that makes sense.
Totally. I think it's really valuable. And I guess on that, I'd like to pull back to a point that you made when you were talking about your own journey. And it's something that we hear languaged often, but I think as women particularly, so this question's really for the women listening, it's something that we don't understand. We're so burdened by our own pressures. We don't often think about what our men are going through. And something that I'm hearing increasingly more often is the burden of the weight of providing for your family. Because I think in this day and age, we've gotten so wrapped up in the fact that that's an equal thing that we all do and we all contribute to. But the fact of the matter is, as a woman, I worry less about how much I'm providing for my family than a man does. And I think it's really important if you're able to share a little around what that feels like or what that looks like, so that our female listeners can understand what our men are going through.
Yeah, look, it's and we were in the same boat. You know, when I was going through my business, we had Marnie was at home. Marnie's my wife, at home doing her thing with the kids. That's changed now. She's now working two jobs, and you know, reckon she can fit another couple of jobs in there as well. It was such a challenge, and I don't want to put people off, but we ended up I can remember that we were so strapped at one stage that we were delivering pamphlets, and we had my daughter in the stroller and pamphlets all stacked up around her, and when it got too hot, we'd have turns sitting in the aircon of the car and deliver these pamphlets to keep, you know, even if that's $60 on the table that week. So the impact, it's a very humbling sort of situation to be in, you know, having those thoughts of a failed business owner, having the burden of telling your wife that we can't put food on the table, and then having to work together as a family to do whatever it takes to, you know, keep fed. So it is hard, Yakka. And after my attempt, I actually wasn't working for two, three years in full time work. And so what that meant is I actually had to do make some very uncomfortable phone calls to our children's school, banks, mortgages, you know, all of these people saying, I've got no money. Do you have a hardship package?
Mm-hmm.
And I've got to tell you, as someone who's a proud plumber, decent plumber, but just couldn't do the things financially, that was probably some of the hardest lessons that I've learned. But I've realised that putting my head in the sand was doing me no good. So I had to make those calls. And I was surprised, I was shocked that every facility had a hardship component to it, and they were willing to work with you. And I still have my house, and my children still go to their school. And so to encourage people, and I talk to people every day that, you know, doing it tough on the finance, you know, the job's finished and they've got nothing to go to, and, you know, there's so much competition out there, you know, winning quotes and stuff like that, that everyone's cutting each other off at the knees. I don't know if I've answered your question, but it's something that's hard, Yakka, on the family, and
It seems like it plays into what you mentioned before about us not being help seeking as men.
Yeah.
You know, to go to the bank and say, "Hey, I'm doing it tough. Can you help me out?" That just adds to the feeling that, well, I've failed my family, I can't pay my mortgage, and now I'm going with my cap in my hand. That almost exacerbates the issue. Even if blokes knew that, or people knew that those alternatives even existed, which a lot of people sadly don't. They don't even know that they can, you know, make an arrangement with the tax office really easily without being, you know, getting criminal charges or losing their house or anything crazy. Like, it's actually really hard to get to that stage. It's got to be really, really bad. So it's just, it's a challenging thing to, I guess, see ourselves differently. And it's a question I wanted to ask you, mate, is, How do you see yourself differently now, or think of yourself differently now than you did before your attempt or leading up to that point? Because you still have, you know, you've got a busy life, you've just languaged a typical week, which sounds, I was feeling tired just listening to you, mate. but how do you manage that differently now, and how do you see yourself differently?
Yeah, look, I, you know, experience is a wonderful teacher. Wonderful, probably not the right word in this occasion.
Relentless.
Yeah, it's a teacher of sorts anyway, you know, it's a subject you never want to do. But I to be able to look at myself now and you know, I'm not perfect. We all still go through tough times. And so sometimes that, hey, you know, while I don't look in the rear vision mirror that often, when times are tough these days, I can say, well, this is how far I've come. And I remember that I can go, you know, I've got so many more options now because I've had to use them and I've gone through them before. So I look at myself now thinking, do you know what? I'm okay. I'm not actually defined by my mental illness. It's a part of me. It certainly makes up who I am, but it doesn't define me. And so I look at all these experiences and have the clear understanding and reflection that do you know what? It's okay to be me. I'm imperfect. I'm someone that's you know, still makes mistakes, but that's okay. And you know, I use the old adage, it's okay not to be okay, it's just not okay to do nothing about it. And so I see myself as someone that's certainly walked a journey, but certainly now with a much larger capacity to help myself. And by helping myself, I can actually help other people as well.
And are there routines or changes you've made to routines, mate, that support, you know, accepting what's going on around you and the stresses and you know, the fatigue and all that sort of stuff, the busyness, like how does that differ for you now, Justin?
Yeah, look, I refer to it as my scaffolding, mate. You know, I'm every now and then I'll still wobble, and if I've got the right scaffolding around me, it's going to prevent me from toppling over all the way. And so I've got like a, I use like a four-layered bit of scaffolding. I've got my friends and family. So my wife's like the conductor of my orchestra. So if she sees me going down a certain road, she pulls in the karaoke mates. If I go down another road, she pulls in the golfing buddies, you know. So she identifies that. And look, I'm a social media nut. So if I'm absent or doing like that, I've already let my mates know. I've given them permission to give me a bell if they notice I'm not posting as prolifically as, you know, seven times a day. Yeah, so and even, you know, calling me out saying, you know, some of your posts aren't real flash, mate, what's going on? So so I've got that one component of my scaffolding of my friends and family who are going to call me out on my behaviours. And my other scaffolding is, you know, I've got my meds and I've got my counselling. So once a month I see a counsellor and, you know, we just have a yarn. We talk about, you know, strategies on what keeps me well and stuff like that. And so I've got that component. I love music. That's music and creating, you know, writing stuff, acting, all that sort of stuff's very important to me. So if I've had a big week, you know, and you hear lots of sad stories and you talk to a lot of people doing it tough, I go to the things that bring me joy, the things that fill my cup. And, you know, I'll have a sing song. I have a belt out of Tom Jones or whatever, you know, the greats. That's debatable. I'll go to those cup-filling things that bring me joy. And then finally, I love the health. Well, you'd be surprised to look at me, but I actually enjoy getting out there, going for walks and getting some. I need some physical activity, and I'm really trying to gun for, you know, at least 15, 20 minutes, even 30 minutes a day of going for a walk or doing something. And I refer to that as like connection. So connection to land, whether it's walking in the bush. I love bush walks or walking on the beach, but doing something active. So those are my four layers of scaffolding that help keep me propped up, help keep me sort of in that place. So
and none of that is complicated or expensive.
No, that's a key element for me.
but it's so similar for all of us, really. And my wife would love this episode because she's an occupational therapist, a mental health occupational therapist. And
cool.
And you know, that whole concept of meaningful occupation is so critical to our mental health. And yet, as business owners, especially, when we're stressed, when the cash flow is tight, when, you know, we're under the pump with work, some of the first things that get cut from our life is those meaningful occupations. It's the guitar jam session with the mates, or around a golf on a Friday afternoon, or, you know, hanging out with the kids at the beach for 2 or 3 hours. Like, that's all the stuff that ends up getting chopped because we're too busy. And it's such a dangerous, slippery slope to get rid of all of that for someone who perceives themselves as mentally well, never mind about if, you know, we're a bit off or we're under a heap of stress. So it's so good to hear you talk about such simple things, mate, as part of your scaffolding. And I really would implore everybody to just have a look at their life and say, well, you know, what am I doing for me and how often?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a little one. I love the AFL saying it's a one percenters, mate. You know, even if you don't put your pressure on yourself to do a half an hour, maybe go for a 5 minute walk. Mm-hmm. You know, just find the one percenters that you can, you know, eke out of your busy day. And I know it. I was having a yarn with my counsellor yesterday, and I said, oh, you know, I've dropped off on me walking, and I've dropped off on me singing, and it's something that's so easy to do in the busyness of the business, you know, and so it's important to, you know, just eke out a 5 minute, you know, song, you know, have a bout in the car, you know, try and find those moments where you can fill your cup. So yeah, good call.
Now, mate, I know we're on a time limit here, Justin, because you're on holidays, mate. I've probably got one or two more questions to hit you with. One of which is one that I asked just about all of our guests, mate, and I'm pretty keen to hear your answer to this one. If you had 1,000 tradies, and let's go with, you know, our audience is trade business owners. You had 1,000 of them in a room, mate, what is one thing you would like to teach them or one thought you'd like to leave them with?
Yeah, good question. I think the lesson that I've learnt myself, and I'd love to, I often put out there, is be kind to yourself. Do you know, we put so much pressure on ourselves we live in a very competitive world. Mm. You know, you're competing for jobs, you're competing, you know, to be the best so that you can, you know, get everything like that. Be kind to yourself and know that, do you know what? Oscar Wilde said it best, mate. Be yourself. Everyone else is taken. So be the best plumber you can be the best Chippy, be the best Sparky, be the best that you can be. And be kind to yourself, knowing that, you know what, as soon as you start trying to be like someone else or do that whole thing, you set yourself up for failure. And so that's my message. Be kind to yourself and know that, you know, be the best you that you can be.
Mm, great advice, mate.
Mm.
I was going to throw to Coxie because, like, I've been hogging the floor here.
You do it well.
The other question I wanted to ask you, Justin, is what do you think needs to change? You know, obviously you work with mates and, you know, you would see some very encouraging stuff and no doubt still some very worrying stuff. What do you think as an industry, you know, the trades in general, around this whole issue, not just suicide, but mental health and, you know, how we deal with stress and everything, what do you think needs to change?
Yeah, look, another great question, mate. Yeah, you're putting me under the pump here.
You're on holidays. You should be on fire.
Yeah, I know. That's true. do you know what? I think there's still, you know, there still are elements. We are changing. We are definitely changing as far as being able to talk about stuff that matters. But there's still that old school element of just harden up and get on with it. And I can, you know, we're working a lot at the moment with young people. There's still some of the stories you hear is just turn your head, some of our young apprentices. And so we just need to keep that focus of, you know, being able to look out for your mates, mm. being able to have courageous conversations, to be fair dinkum. You know, I'm a Kiwi, and when I come over, I got my concept of what a fair dinkum Australian was. I want to flip that fair dinkum around and say, to be fair dinkum is actually being transparent and calling yourself out when you're doing it tough, or calling your mates out when you can see they're doing it tough, because burying our heads in the sand, pretending like everything okay is not working. Mm-hmm. And the old adage, mate, if we keep doing what if we always do what we've always done, we'll always get what we always got. Mm-hmm. If nothing changes, then nothing changes. So what needs to change is we need to be fair dinkum, call each other out, notice when our mates are struggling and have conversations that can change a lot. So I'll get off my soapbox now. And
oh, no, I could listen to you rant all afternoon,
same,
mate.
Same. Such important words, they really are.
It is, and I just don't think we can talk to too many people like you, Justin, and have you share your story too many times, because it's not getting through as much as it needs to. Mm. And, you know, the more people that get on board with this way of thinking, I think is you know, the more good we're going to do, obviously. So, mate, I personally want to thank you for your time today. I know you have a lot on your plate, and it's been – you've been on my list for a long time to get you on the show, mate. So it's been fantastic to chat to you, and I really appreciate you sharing your story too, mate.
Yeah, look, and thank you for, you know, taking time to have a yarn, but thank you for all that you're doing. Because, you know, you're one conversation that's reaching so many people. You make it a difference in lives, and, you know, you might not see that day to day, but I can guarantee you that the conversations that you're having are changing people's lives, changing the way people look at things, and we're changing that word stigma. We're changing all those things all through your conversations that you guys are doing. So, yeah, I return that in a boomerang fashion and right back at you. Thank you for everything you guys do, and keep going.
Thanks,
thank
mate.
You, Justin. That's very touching.
Now, one last thing. You did mention you're a social media slut.
yes, that's what
people,
I do, buddy.
If people want to see how awesome your beard is, where do they go and find out more about you and also about mates? Obviously, we should get you to share those details too, mate.
Yeah, look, I mean, I'm the only Justin Gange on the planet, which is, you know, there you go. Oscar Wilde, eat your heart out. So, yeah, jump and, you know, Google my name. There's a lot of different stories and little vignettes of, you know, my days on reality TV and things like that.
Yeah,
But there's also a few articles there from Mates in Construction, Are You Okay? All those sort of things. So, yeah, just Google Justin Gange and you should find something. But if you are struggling or doing it tough and need some support, you know, and you're a tradie out there, you know, Mates in Construction is a free support service, 1-300-642-111. Or, you know, if you need to talk to, you know, someone from Lifeline, you know, 1-3, now I've forgotten the number, 1-3-111-4, I believe.
I think that's right.
It is, but...
Yeah, we'll put the links in the show notes as well.
If you know someone's struggling, you know, have that conversation or help them make a call to one of those numbers. You know, one conversation could change your life.
Mm.
10 seconds of courage, mate, I love it.
Thank you.
Love it. Thank you.
Sweet as, bro. Enjoy your holiday.
You.
Love it. Certainly is an interesting story, and I love the way that Justin's so happy to be vulnerable in his story and share it so that we can all gain from his experience.
Absolutely.
It's not an easy thing to do, and yet it can be the most empowering thing to do, to be vulnerable and allow yourself to be heard.
Mm. And I think that key message for me about the fact that blokes are not help seekers means that we have to be help offerers.
And it doesn't take much, 10 seconds of courage.
No, because blokes like to help and fix things.
Mm-hmm.
So it actually makes sense for those of us who are okay to go around offering help to people that aren't, because they're not going to ask for it.
No, and my favourite thing in the whole interview was, as soon as you go into fix-it mode, you're no longer listening. That's a great quote, and it's something that I think all of us, you know, mums, dads, parents, blokes, we all go into fix-it mode. We want to fix it. We want to take that pain away. We want to make it better, but sometimes the best thing you can do is just listen.
So you mean I've got to shut up?
Yes, Warren. And on the listening front, how about we give you a few phone numbers?
Yeah.
If this has raised any issues for you today, or you know of somebody who's struggling and need a bit of help or guidance on how to help them, you can contact Mates in Construction on 1-300-642-111. That was 1-300-642-111, or Google Mates in Construction. Alternatively, you can call Lifeline on 1-3-111-4.
And I would encourage everybody who just listened to that to write those numbers on an old business card or a piece of paper, stick it in your wallet, and just have it handy. Mm. Because it's part of, you know, asking people if they're okay, nothing worse than being ill-prepared. So, you know, it may never be necessary for you, but at least I think it's a good reminder of, hey, there's some help available, and here's a number, let's call them together, as Justin said. So, I certainly carry a card in my wallet with those services on it. And, I just think it's important that we're all prepared for this sort of stuff and willing to take a stand. So anyway, thanks again for tuning in. Hope you got some value from today's episode. I don't know. Should we talk about the group, Coxie?
You know where to find us. Jump onto Facebook, Tradies and Business, private group. What are we up to now? Almost 1,200 like-minded tradies, business owners. They're willing to support, help and connect with you.
Sounds good. See you in there.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Tradies and Business podcast with Warwick Bidwell and Nicole Cox. Find out more about today's guest, tools for your trade business, and other cool stuff at tradiesandbusiness.com.au.